pull-up jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. Three-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Grizzlies. As always, I'm your host, Mark King. For this show, another Wednesday edition to the show with our guest, Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. We have Joe on every single Wednesday of this season. Joe, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm happy that the Grizzlies are doing well, but I see more and more people like trying to talk themselves into a playoff run, and I just need people to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it was honestly the first thing I had in mind to talk to you about was this idea.
Mind meld.
it's the former SB Nation in us, the Grizzlies melding together. As I mentioned, I used to have some old guy running your Twitter account at games. Now there's some young Parker, and I don't even know half the time what he's tweeting about. But nonetheless,
yeah, I don't know what he's saying. As long as it's appropriate, I guess it's fine. We're a family.
Look, the kids get it, man. The kids like it. So, yeah. I was gonna talk to you like right off the bat. Like, sounds like you are of the idea. Do you think they're just going to fall back into where they naturally were always going to be in the season, or do you think it's going to be a combination of other teams leapfrogging them? You know, is it going to be the Grizzlies, you know, shooting themselves in the foot almost because they have a young team and just not enough talent? Or is it other teams around them getting better as the season goes along?
I think that they're improving, and that's naturally going to lead to more victories. I do think that them winning more than, you know, 27 games, I took the over on that on their, I think it was 26.5 was the official number for most sports books, and I took the over. I think that them winning closer to 30 games is realistic at this stage, but winning 30 games isn't going to get you in the playoffs. And I truly do enjoy Grizzlies fans in Grizz Nation because they obviously allow for me to have the job that I do and the job that you do and all the other folks that cover the Grizzlies. You know, if they're not looking for content, you know, we're out of gigs. But at the same time, just a few weeks ago, people wanted to trade Jaren Jackson Jr. for Jaylen Brown. For some irrational reason, people thought he was terrible. People were, and I'm not saying everybody, and this is a minority of the fan base, but my point is it existed. People were concerned about Ja Morant and his ability to consistently perform at a high level. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination, because I'm not. But I do think that we very often, as Grizzlies fans, media, whatever we are, we get caught up in the moment. And we get caught up in the bubble. And right now they're playing well, and that's terrific, and fans should be excited about that. Even when they lose, they are darn fun to watch. But you have to remember that two of their best players, arguably their two best players at this point, are not legally able to drink. And I keep bringing that up as my example because they're going to have issues. Ja Morant has never played this many basketball games in a season before. He's going to hit a wall, just like every rookie does, just about. Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to have ebbs and flows in his game. He's not going to be Steph Curry or Klay Thompson from three on a consistent basis. That's just not realistic. And there's going to be times where this team loses games that they're not supposed to, just like they win games against the Miami Heat that maybe people think they're not supposed to win. There's going to be duds. People point to this upcoming schedule and say, oh my gosh, 16 of the next 19 games are against teams below 500. Yeah, right. Guess what? The Grizzlies are also below 500. And it's not like they're a group that's going to be able to get up on a Wednesday night for Oklahoma City and the Thunder. I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped Wednesday night's game. I hope I'm wrong. That'd be great. If this team was able to be a playoff team, that would be remarkable. Taylor Jenkins, the whole organization, the roster, they all should be commended if that were a realistic destination. It's still not a realistic destination. You have teams like Timberwolves, the Trailblazers, various squads that are very interested in actually making the playoffs. The Grizzlies aren't. They're not going to be buyers by any stretch of the imagination. They are still very much in asset acquisition mode. They may not move a Jay Crowder or a Solomon Hill, if that was their original plan, because they're helping so much in ways that the, you know, even the smartest Grizzlies fan or media member wouldn't be able to consider. But I don't see them like trying to convince Andre Iguodala to start playing for the Grizzlies. You know, that's not going to happen. I don't see them. If somebody offers a first-round pick and a young asset for Jay Crowder, which they probably won't, but if they did, they're not going to say, oh, I don't know, we have a chance at the 8 seed. This isn't your older brothers and older sisters Grizzlies that would take those shots to try to stay relevant in the here and now. They have long-term goals, and just because they win 4 out of 5 games in an 82-game season, that's not going to impact what they decide to do over the next few months.
What do you land on the idea of, you know, conveying this pick this year? Do you think that this is the time to go ahead and get it out of the way? Or do you, would you rather them have a pick next year? Where do you land on that? The convey or not convey? I've seen a lot of that. Obviously with this, you know, the talk of the playoffs goes hand in hand with giving this pick away to Boston. Where are you at on the convey or not convey? I know that they're probably, it's all going to shake out in the end, but what would you rather them do?
It's ironic that this is a question now, because obviously last year this was a major question and I was very much on team convey. And of course, luck of the draw, the Grizzlies wind up, you know, Zion Williamson hasn't played a meaningful NBA minute yet. So in the moment, you can say, pardon me, that he obviously, the Grizzlies won the lottery right here and now. Now, Zion, if he's healthy, is probably a superior NBA talent to Ja, but he's not healthy right now, and Ja Morant is the runaway winner of Rookie of the Year. That's pretty clear at this stage. So it all worked out on that front, and I think because of Ja Morant being a Grizzly, the convey or not convey debate of 2019-2020 is not as relevant. If they jump up to the top four because they move up, even though they're in, you know, they're sixth or seventh in the lottery, I think that's fine. I'm not, you know, hell bent on them conveying. I don't necessarily love anybody in the top three or four. Anthony Edwards would fit really well, I think. LaMelo Ball, I think you can make an argument for some of his skills. Obviously, Grizzlies fans and Memphians in general love James Wiseman. So there's names at the top that you might be interested in, but to me, right, it's not like there's a Zion. There's not a Ja. There's not guys that you look at and say, yeah, that guy is going to be a star. There's no one worth tanking for. There's no one that you perceive it in this moment. And again, things can change. Obviously, the basketball season, especially at the college level, is still relatively young. There's no one that you look at and say, that guy's worth developing or risking developing a losing culture for. And obviously the fact that the Pelicans and the Grizzlies jumped up in the way they did in the draft because of the lottery modifications, there's not as much incentive to tank. So Memphis figures to be better next year than this year anyway. I think that naturally it's going to shake out a little bit because I don't see them continuing on this tear that they're currently on because of their youth and inexperience. But if for some reason it does and they're in a place where they do have the potential to be a team that's at eighth or ninth, I certainly, if I were Zach Kleiman and Jason Wexler, wouldn't go to Taylor Jenkins and be like, all right, we're shutting down Ja Morant for a month so we can start losing some games. I don't think that's their intention. You know, the nice thing about the Ja Morant arrival is that convey or not convey debate is not as relevant. If you do, you add another top young talent, or excuse me, you pay off a debt to Boston finally, and it frees you up for future trades down the road in terms of another asset in a 2021-2022. You know, it just makes things cleaner and easier if you want to make a big swing for a player like a Bradley Beal, which I don't think they do, and I don't think the Wizards want to trade him, but I'm just using that as a hypothetical name. If that were something you were interested in, it makes it more realistic. On the flip side, if you don't convey and you move up into the top three or four of this draft, chances are you're going to get somebody that can help you and be a major contributor alongside Jaren and Ja in the future. And logically speaking, you're going to be better next season than you are this one, so that draft pick that Boston gets that's unprotected won't be as good. The Ja Morant arrival makes that debate less relevant this year than it was last year, if it makes sense. I think they have an exit strategy if they do convey, and I think they have an exit strategy if they don't. And the moves that they made over the summer, plus the little bit of luck from the Morant acquisition, all adds up to the convey or not convey debate not being as disastrous as it could have been. You know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Yeah, obviously Ja Morant, obviously luck has played a large part into all of this, and getting Ja Morant has changed the entire course of the way this franchise is moving, and has really changed the entire course of this year. I mean, we were talking, Omar and Sankofa and I were talking on the show on Tuesday, and he has literally changed the game for this team and a lot of these games. You know, if without Ja Morant, or the games that he's played, they're 9-12, and it's a much better record than you would have thought of at this point in the year. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back and talk with more from Joe Molinix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockedonNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Welcome back to the show, talking with Joe Molinix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, like we do every single Wednesday on this show. Right as I was in that first segment, I was talking about Amari and I were just kind of figuring out where we thought they would be, and I kind of ask you the same thing. Are you surprised at where they are at this far into the year? You know, they're obviously still under 500, but for me, they're on pace to win more games than I thought they would. Granted, I had them probably lower than most. I think I had them the lowest. But either way, they're still on pace for more wins than I thought they would have this year.
They're roughly where I thought they'd be in terms of wins. I didn't think they'd get them the way they have. I didn't think they'd beat the Miami Heat. I mean, that's a pretty good win. Miami is a good mix of a dominant star in Jimmy Butler and lots of young talent. I didn't think they'd perform the way they did against Miami. I do think that there's surprising performances within them doing well. I didn't think Jaren would be this. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr., you could argue, is one of the greatest three-point shooters in the NBA this season. And that's
he's the best on the team.
It's not hyperbole, and he's almost 7 foot tall, and he's under the age of 21. You know, that's a third of the year through. We still have a lot of basketball left to play. But he has to get credit. You know, I talk about Call Me at Christmas. We're a week away. And right. He looks the part of a three-point marksman, which is extremely dangerous if he continues to develop his perimeter game as a penetrator, playing off the dribble. You know, he's shown a lot of growth in that area, too. If we're able to let go of him not being a true big, not going to be a guy that's going to go and gobble up rebounds like a Valanciunas or a Zach Randolph, and we let him be him, and they continue to build this roster and get wings and rebound by committee from the perimeter in, I don't necessarily see Jaren Jackson Jr. going anywhere but up. I don't see him regressing if he's allowed to be this version of himself. He obviously won't shoot at a Steph Curry level or a Klay Thompson 8 made threes. You know, that's not something that's that he's going to be able to replicate consistently. But, you know, all it takes is the ability to hit two or three a game. And right. A defense completely shifts and changes, and it creates so much more room for a big like Valanciunas or for a slashing wing or guard off of the screen to get to the basket. It just opens up so many things for you offensively. I've been surprised by Solomon Hill. You know, folks got to remember that, you know, a Plumlee brother who's no longer in Memphis and Solomon Hill are what Memphis got in exchange for Chandler Parsons. And Solomon Hill is very clearly the best player of all three of those guys from that trade.
Yeah,
he has shown, you know, he's playing for another contract. I think he wants to show he's still an NBA player, and he's certainly doing that at the moment. He looks the part. But I think his success is something that definitely isn't sustainable compared to what he's been historically these last couple of seasons. We have a much larger sample size that will suggest that Solomon will cool off. But I do think he should be commended for the hot start he's had and the way that he's come in with Memphis having these injuries. He's been a consummate pro. I think the importance of Dillon Brooks is somewhat surprising, how his scoring is so closely linked to Grizzlies' wins more often than not. I do think that's concerning because Dillon is, as we've talked about before on this show, he's outside of his role right now. You know, Dillon Brooks on a playoff team is probably a sixth man. On a championship contender, he probably gets 17 to 20 minutes off the bench and right. isn't even in that six-man role. So as he progresses hopefully towards that with the Grizzlies over these next few years, you want him to maintain that supreme confidence. He's almost like Nick Young at this point in terms of the way that he views himself as an offensive threat. He also needs to be able to have enough wherewithal and self-awareness to say, I don't have it tonight. I need to be better facilitating, swinging the ball, getting it to the guys that do have their shot. And he does that from time to time, but it's just not consistent. So consistent growth on that end on nights that he doesn't have his shot would be good to see. But there's individual performances more than the team overall that have really impressed me. And the way that they've gotten to where they are has been more interesting in terms of their wins and losses, the actual wins and losses themselves.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on track there. Again, they're not where I thought they'd be, but you know, they're hella fun to watch. Let's take another quick break. We're going to talk about those individual performances coming up next with Joe Mullinex. If you are looking for a last minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to breakingtee.com/lockedon. Breaking Tee makes sports t-shirts around teams' most passionate moments. It's great for all fans. Just go to breakingtee.com/lockedon and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and more fun sports gifts. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Joe Mullinex, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. You mentioned the individual performances being better than you thought they would be. Someone that has really come on strong is De'Anthony Melton, a player that, you know, really only got in the rotation because of injury, but he has secured his place in the rotation for now. He ended the game on the floor against the Heat. He played 25 minutes more than Tyus Jones. It's, you know, more than Kyle Anderson, more than Dillon Brooks. Obviously, Taylor Jenkins is a guy that plays guys with a hot hand. He admits that. He tells me that all the time. He rode with De'Anthony Melton at the end of the game because that's what he thought was best for the team. Nonetheless, De'Anthony Melton still got more minutes than a lot of those guys that are starters and are on big contracts. Do you think De'Anthony Melton has secured his place, not necessarily 25 minutes, but long-term in this rotation, he's probably pretty solid in it?
As long as he stays hot, I think you make a fair point about the hot hand. And, you know, Grayson Allen, when he comes back from injury, Tyus Jones has improved a little bit. Marco Guterich could get hot. You know, there's lots of ways that this thing can go that if he has one or two bad nights, obviously, he's a better defender than an offensive player at this stage. If he has multiple bad shooting performances where it hurts the bench's scoring production, I could see him sliding back a little bit. But I think it's more likely that he maintains his role in the rotation, largely because he's able to play both guard positions, defend multiple wing spots, and because you could argue, is the team's best perimeter defender. You know, Tony Allen talks about how De'Anthony Melton is a grit and grind disciple. He would have fit in with that era. And I agree. You know, if you're going to try to use Jaren Jackson Jr. as more of a perimeter player, Melton is almost a necessity in terms of his ability to rebound, attack the boards. You know, he won't really blow up in your mind in terms of scoring. You won't look at him and say, oh, wow, he can get a bucket in so many different ways. But he does all the little things. He pursues the 50-50 balls. Again, he defends really well. He attacks the glass and cleans it as a wing, an undersized wing, certainly as a guard. He has the physical capacity off the ball especially to be a threat as a creator, as a facilitator, as a driver to the lane. You know, I don't think he's best suited to be a true point guard, and I think that's one of the reasons Tyus Jones's job is safe. He may not have, you know, 20 minutes a night, but I do believe Tyus is that true backup to Ja. Melton can be that if you need him to be, but he's best served being that reserve wing that gets, you know, 18 to 20 minutes a night, maybe a little bit more on average. And he defends your best or the opposing team's biggest threat come crunch time. I trust him as a defender in terms of his lateral movement, his understanding of angles. He, when he came from Phoenix, had that reputation as someone who had potential, especially as a defensive player, and it's really starting to manifest. So I'm with you on the love for D'Anthony Melton. I do think that Jenkins playing the hot hand could impact him to an extent, but he most certainly should see continued investment of time moving forward as this team tries to figure out who the heck is going to play next to Jaren and Jaw long term.
I think you're right. You know, Melton is a guy that he does a lot of different things. He's almost like Kyle Anderson in the sense that he's, you know, very versatile, but his offense is sometimes lacking. You mentioned Marco Guterich, a guy that didn't play at all in the game on Monday against the Heat. Are you still a believer in Marco? I mean, it seems like he might be on the outside looking in, especially if Grayson comes back. You have Melton getting those minutes. Obviously, like you mentioned, I don't think Tyus is going anywhere either, because he is a capable backup point guard. He is struggling at the moment because of the system that's being run and just adjusting to everything in this new system. So I don't think that he's going to be on the outside looking at all. But Marco is a guy that, you know, has had opportunity, you know, in the games this year and had minutes and just really hasn't taken advantage of them. Are you still believing in Marco? Where do you land on him now?
I think it's important to acknowledge that Marco is transitioning too, obviously coming over from Europe.
Sure.
That can take some time to get used to the speed of the game, the way that it's played. But if I'm ranking the wings, Marco's definitely at the bottom of the list in terms of my priorities. He just has, you know, of all of the guys that are on the roster, Grayson Allen has the capacity to be a defender. We just talked about D'Anthony Melton. Kyle Anderson obviously is versatile. Up and down the list, until you get to Guterich, you have guys that you look at and say, yeah, they can do a variety of different things. They're versatile. I don't see that with Guterich. I see a guy who, in theory, can shoot the three, can get to the rim pretty well, both off the dribble and off of screens and cuts to the basket. But he doesn't project as a great defender. He doesn't really facilitate well. I do think that's something that can improve as time goes on. But if you're going to be a net negative defender, which Guterich probably always will be, you better be especially strong offensively, and right now he's not. You know, Grayson Allen is better. D'Anthony Melton, even a majority of the time, is better. And if D'Anthony Melton's going to be a more impactful offensive player than you, plus be a great rebounder, plus be a capable defender, you're not going to get time. And the Grizzlies are going to continue to try to find ways to get the guy who gets the system, who is executing at the highest level on the floor. And I think that's good evidence of them not being in the area of tanking. If they're bad, they lose, so be it. If they're good, they win, so be it. Guterich doesn't help them in that process right now, and he has to really focus on finding his stroke and fitting within the schemes, especially offensively, because if he's not able to and he keeps getting abused defensively, and if he's not able to contribute in a positive manner, at least offensively, he's not going to be a part of the long-term plans of this team. And it's going to be sad to see, because I do think he has offensive viability and you see flashes of it. He just hasn't been able to put it all together for a sustained period of time, not just in one game, but across a variety of games.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's a guy that is a very one-dimensional player. And so it'll be interesting to see what he can do, or if he gets even a you know, playing time against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Wednesday night. As always, Joe, go follow him on Twitter at Joe Mullinex. Go follow me on Twitter at King_producer. And also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Grizz. That's where we will all continue the conversation after this show all the time. Again, we have Joe every single Wednesday. Don't miss it. Make sure you go and subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast platform you're using, so you don't miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow with an episode with David Cobb from The Commercial Appeal. Joe, I appreciate it, man. Let's do it again next week.
I'm looking forward to it, Mark. Thank you, buddy.